I'm Lindsay.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Joe from PopX Cast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. Reactive. Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry. If we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning. Welcome to episode 249 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where you are never going to believe the incredible things we're about to drop on you, listeners. You will be shocked by the revelations about what madness is going on in the offices of Gallifrey Public Radio with this bombshell of an announcement. Fans of the show, all five of you, will lose your minds at the news that, wait for it, never mind. I just heard that our spinoff was canceled in pre-production, so... Doesn't really matter. Well, anyway, I'm your host. My name is Keir Hansen.
And I'm your host, Haley Malley.
And I'm Jay Witten. And joining us this week is a friend of the cast, blogger, writer, and devout Whovian, Ian McCann. How are you doing tonight, Ian?
I'm doing wonderful. You?
Fantastic. So this week, we're going to explore how easy it is to immediately alienate yourself from friends, coworkers, and thousands of unnamed individuals on the internet. With the mere mention of something you heard, read, saw, or completely made up. GPR has always tried, keep in mind, to be a spoiler-aware source of Whovian information and discussion. If we delve too much into news items that could potentially spoil an upcoming story or development, or hear a rumor that's gaining a lot more than a fair share of plausible traction, we try and warn you know, the listener, that we're about to do so. So why? Because it's respectful to those who want a complete surprise. But in this digital and global age, is that really even feasible anymore? Or is it worth making everybody whisper or speak in vague references?
So I guess with something of this nature, it's probably best to kind of go around the table and consider what you believe to be the definitive breakdown of what a spoiler is. You know, you can go all official with it, or you can just go with what you believe to be the sort of current vernacular. Ian, as our guest, and I know that we've had this conversation casually, you know, offline, what would you consider to be a clearly identifiable spoiler with we'll take it with Doctor Who, with broadcast television. We'll use that as our baseline example.
With a TV show, it's usually something that they're trying to keep a surprise for the viewers, or something they are holding back for anticipation, for news reasons, and someone gets a hold of it when it comes out, and you know, it's a big surprise. So people get clicks and likes, and to get people talking.
So prior to point of actual broadcast, though?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So then what would you consider to be, if it's something that's discussed, either live time, like live tweeting or something of that sort, would you consider that to be anything within the realm of what someone might consider a spoiler?
Yes, technically.
Okay.
I suppose you are being spoiled for it if you hadn't seen it yourself. But in the grand scheme of things, it's somebody enjoying the show. But I agree, if you have people or friends in different time zones, as most of us do, to be respectful, you should make it where it's not right out in the open for someone to see.
Mm, okay. Yeah.
Which you can do most social media and stuff.
All right.
It's all about respect towards other people, the viewers. You know, you should have the option of whether or not you want to know this information.
Okay, and we're going to get to probably discussing how much of that falls upon the person who does not want to be spoiled versus the person who mm-hmm. has the information that could potentially ruin it for someone else. Haley, where do you chime in on what you would consider to be a working definition?
Okay, so if we're talking about, you know, stuff before an episode airs, so, you know, anything that's like a plot detail or something that, you know, might come from a leaked script or something like that, that I would call that a spoiler. I think information like casting and stuff like that, I would not call that a spoiler because, you know, if you're watching television live, you're going to stumble across a trailer or something that has the new actor in it. I don't think you can avoid that. I wouldn't call that a spoiler.
All right.
And then there's the after an episode airs, you know, content that is in that episode that you wouldn't know until you watched it, that would be a spoiler for somebody that hasn't seen it.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm interested in the fact that you're mentioning things like casting decisions, and I want to look at that one specifically because within the Doctor Who realm, there are some things just in recent news that might actually apply to that that could either support that or could contest it, depending on how you want to spin it. But Jay, where would you sit in this sort of this definition game?
As far as definitions go, I would say that any information regarding plot or story or anything like that that hasn't been aired to a wide enough audience to be readily available would be considered spoiler. Obviously, a good example would be the casting of Jodie Whittaker as the 13th Doctor would not be a spoiler. I mean, there was a huge announcement. It's been all over the news. If you haven't heard about it by now, then clearly you've been under a rock. But
pretty impressive rock.
Yeah, but
some people did try. Bless them.
Looking back to the series finale that we just finished with John Sim appearing, I would argue that was actually spoiled. You know, it's him returning to the show should have been a surprise, should have been something that was kept hidden, but wound up getting spoiled. So it's a fine line. It's kind of almost a case by case basis. There's no broad umbrella thing, but basically, if it's an episode that hasn't aired and it has something to do with the story, then consider it spoilery.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that each of you brought up a kind of a point that I want to make sure that we circle around to because it requires, I think, a little bit of additional unpacking. Ian, you had mentioned things about time zones, and that's specifically with broadcast television. That's always going to be a real concern because, obviously, we're all, you know, kind of focused and centralized on Doctor Who being something that airs 5 to 6 hours prior to, the western side of the Atlantic Ocean, the opportunity to have a lot of information, a lot of reactions, a lot of live time, well, live to point of airing Greenwich Mean Time, to ruin things, however you choose to label it, can have a big impact. As far as we used to use some sort of a definition that just said, hey, prior to, prior to broadcast within its country of origin, you know, when we got really regionally specific about our definitions of what we considered the moratorium on spoilers, that can we even look unfavorably upon a UK or a European viewer who sees something relative to their broadcast time, knowing that a huge portion of the viewing audience is not going to see it for another 5 to 6 hours? Can we even hold that against them?
I think you can.
Really?
I mean, especially
I think
if you have
where they share it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people should be able to discuss it, but there's plenty of open forums. Like, I'll share for an example. I had a person who openly mentioned about Alpha Centauri returning in Empress of Mars. Mm-hmm. I mean, before I had saw it, which was about 2 hours beforehand, and that was kind of a big reveal that I thought really should have been kept hidden for anybody who was going to watch it. And then the next week, they were talking about how they didn't want to be spoiled for the upcoming episode, so no one talk about it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a
you know, the hypocrisy of that. But I think a lot of people think, well, I should have the right to talk about it online, and you can. But if you have friends and you, you know, hopefully want them to enjoy the show too, you should have a way to not have to blur out all these specific details where everyone can see it.
Okay. Do you feel, though, I mean, we had also mentioned, two of us already alluded to the fact that there are means to be able to preface regarding, you know, whatever your social network is of choice, whether you're just getting, you know, quick thoughts out, stream of consciousness on Twitter, or whether you're composing your reactions, sometimes with more or less, careful editing and thought on Facebook or your blogs or things of that sort, which may require a little bit more editing and composition time. But you've got all of these different constructs in there, or at least behaviors that people will put into play to keep spoilers out of immediate view. Maybe a mm-hmm. little harder on Twitter unless you tell somebody, hey, mute me for the next 45 minutes.
I was about to say Twitter, I think, would just be a no-go, really. I mean, the way Twitter is set up.
It is particularly difficult, depending on your client. I mean, if you're using a particular bit of software that allows you to be able to say, all right, I don't want to know anything that's mentioning the following mm-hmm. keywords for the next until I say otherwise.
I feel like Twitter in particular, that's on the person who wants to avoid spoilers. Like, you should know not to go on Twitter, because there are so many people that do things like live tweet an episode mm-hmm. or give you their hot take as soon as they finish watching it on Twitter. Like, that's on the person to know who they're following and be like, yeah, I can't be on Twitter until I finish.
Mm. Well, that's kind of Twitter's MO, is that instant thing. But I think a lot of people who are trying to be respectful and to not ruin it for their friends who may not have seen it, you know, the little spoiler warnings and the little gaps so it's underneath the expanded text or in the comment sections. There's a lot of ways to do it and still talk about the episode without impacting others' enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
And of course, forums as well. They, you know, we all know about forums and their little dedicated sections for, you know, talk about the episode.
Yep. Do you think, in that regard, I'm thinking specifically about sort of comparing the stream of consciousness nature of Twitter and the more conversational interjection thread nature of Facebook and such, or maybe even Tumblr too, to a certain regard, that I would say, maybe it's just me that's observing it, or maybe I'm more keen to it right now, that within about the past year or so, maybe 2 years, that people are starting to adhere to a little bit more of an unspoken code about how to handle spoilers. I think maybe something's happened in the last couple of years. It's like the Game of Thrones effect or whatever it is you want to factor in there, that has said just lately enough people have gotten slapped around or you know, run out of town socially on a rail to say, all right, well, I want to talk about this, but it looks like the way to do it is to say, I'm about to talk about this, read on for more. Is it just recently that I'm feel like I'm seeing more of this adherence to this sort of courtesy?
Well, I think that was in the wake of a couple major, you know, fan type news sources getting hit hard for putting spoilers in their headlines. Especially like last year around the end of Game of Thrones, I think is when it was. There were a couple of them that got slapped hard for that.
Well, you know, we're living in the time of event TV. Game of Thrones, Walking Dead. The whole thing about who was last season, who had gotten killed by the new villain of the season,
yeah,
Negan.
Negan's bat attack, yeah.
I think, actually, Americans got to see it before the British did, and I know quite a few friends who were very, very upset to find out who had gotten killed previously before they had watched it themselves. So I think there's a lot of battle scars over about spoilers, because everyone's got that one show that they really want to watch, and everybody sees it at different times. Yeah. I mean, nowadays, people don't have time to sit down, and with streaming and online, nobody watches it at the same time anymore. No one ever sits down at the same time and watches it. Like right now, I should be watching Twin Peaks, but I'm not. So I'm avoiding social media right now for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, until last week, we were recording while Game of Thrones aired.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which was
tough. You know, for me, I probably have seen the majority of spoilers for Game of Thrones and Walking Dead through memes. People with joke memes have spoiled so much for both of those shows for me.
That's why I've
kind of stayed away from Game of Thrones.
That's one of the sort of the outliers. The conversational threads, I think people are starting to recognize that, okay, I'm about to drop my thoughts on this, so everybody who wants to tune in, read further. Otherwise, you know, you might want to go on to the next cat photo or what have you. But memes are relentless, and they are blatant. I mean, there's no mistaking half the stuff that shows up because they grab the most pivotal moments visually or by caption nature and throw it out there and say, hey, wasn't this the moment that knocked you back on your couch and sort of thing and what have you.
Yeah.
Now, Jay, you had brought up, because I know we're talking about things like the nature of the way people watch, and I know that we have this conversation constantly about, you know, live television is not live television anymore, and you know, we talk about daily viewing stats and all the stuff that we go into. So I wonder about the statute of limitations, okay? We talked about this. I know we have conversations about things like cinematic releases. I know we're sort of breaking away from broadcast television, but cinematic releases becomes an easy way to point at this. New Marvel film comes out. We know it's going to take our circle of friends a certain amount of time for everybody to get their schedules in gear and go see it so that we can discuss it. And we've sort of said, all right, we're going to say 2 weeks. We're going to give everybody...
Or the end of the second weekend in theaters, at least.
Right. And then all bets are off.
Then it's on the person who wants to avoid the spoilers to avoid it.
Correct.
Yeah. I think 2 weeks is a pretty reasonable time period for releases.
For films, yes, but for TV shows, when they're coming out every week, clearly that's going to have to be a truncated timetable.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think TVs, like if you've got, you know, we have dedicated chat groups for each of the shows that we watch. Mm-hmm. Like while it's airing, you know, that's on you to stay out of there if you don't want to know what's happening, because people are talking about it as they watch it.
Well, I think for TV it has to be, because TV has a shorter shelf life than film anyway, and besides, you can watch it at home. A lot of the big problem is getting people out and going to the theater and getting a babysitter and all that. At home, you don't have to do that, so you have much more opportunities to catch up on an episode or something than you do go to the movies.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Now, Haley, you had actually brought up, when you were defining spoilers as you perceive it, that it would not include things like casting news. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna throw you an intentional hot potato on this one and say, what about the set photos that were being sent around with David Bradley on set prior to?
Yeah, I feel like a set photo is not the same as a casting announcement. You know, that's if it's a set photo that, you know, somebody took off their balcony, oh, look what I saw, and they're sharing that, that's somebody intentionally trying to spoil things or, you know, get the attention that comes with spoiling.
Absolutely.
I know there are people who are like, I don't want to know who is cast as the next companion. You know, if you tell me that, you're spoiling it. That's not spoilers. That's news, and it's hard to avoid that. You know, you're going to see a trailer with that person in it before the show airs.
Right.
It's not a spoiler.
Okay. But there, you will have some people, maybe even within my own household, that don't even watch scenes from next week. You know, they don't watch the trailers. They don't want to know the teaser. Nothing. They literally want to sit down, you know, let the episode begin and just be, you know, shocked and awed by everything.
And if you're only watching one show on the network, or you're only pulling stuff that has already had all the advertisements removed from it to watch your stuff, you can do that. But if you watch another show that's on that same network, and even if you're fast forwarding through the commercials on the DVR or whatever, you might come across, you know, a trailer for next week's episode and see that, and it's not entirely avoidable.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Kier,
with
your example, Kier, how does that exactly play out? Because I know that, I mean, clearly she's friends with the same people that we are, and it's not anything that she makes us do for her. It's one of those things where this is her decision to avoid this kind of thing, and so the onus is on her to avoid it, not on everybody else.
And that's a really important point, because that comes around to things like social media as well. And people say, you know, oh, I'm tapping out of Twitter for the next 36 hours because I know I'm not going to get a chance to watch the next episode of, you know, XYZ program. And I know you all are going to be going spastic about it, so I'm going to, oh, I don't know, maybe actually focus on work for the next day.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it was a pipe dream. But anyway, But I know in this particular example, I have gotten to the point now because she's been, you know, careful about it, and she says things like, "I'll say you wouldn't believe it." She stops. Do I want to know this? And I know by her definition, and by conversations we've had about what she thinks is kind of a cool thing to know versus doesn't think to know. You know, if I tell her, "Oh, this obscure classic villain is being brought back," and she doesn't know it. She's like, okay, well, what is it? You know, and we can have the conversation there. Because she knows it's not going to take anything away from her enjoyment of the episode. And mm-hmm. I think it's something we've discussed a lot this season with some of the little Easter eggs and little gifts that Moffat has really been doing for classic fans, because he really feels like his training wheels have been off this past season. He's been allowed to really put those in as long as he's doing it carefully and asking his writers to be very careful about, don't let it step on the enjoyment of the episode proper for individuals who won't get the reference. If they mm-hmm. get it, great. Extra gravy for you. If they don't, it's still a great story, and it has this weird little thing that you can choose to delve into farther if you want to. So
right.
Knowing that, she says, all right, is this something that's going to screw up my enjoyment of what I already know? Or is this something that's an Easter egg that you dorks get? In which case, you can explain it to me, and then when I see it, I'll think, oh, okay, now I see what he was jumping up and down in his seat about.
But it would be a different story if you were to tell her, oh, hey, the Master's coming back next week.
Right. She got ruined on that one by social media mm-hmm. and was genuinely upset about it. Genuinely. Aww. Because she was really big on the whole Saxon Master arc to begin with. And as you alluded to, Jay, the idea of if that were allowed to play out the way they wanted it to, and I think it's really unfortunate. I think that's kind of the nature of one of the things I wanted to really bring up at this point, which is the fact that networks now are feeling like, maybe it's just me or my interpretation of it, that they feel in certain instances that they have to beat the spoilers to the punch by releasing officially drafted press releases that announce things that are happening, because word has come down that some crap tabloid, the Mirror, has gotten a hold of some information, or the Sun, or on. And that the only way to own it is to get the word out prior.
Well, we had the same issue when they it leaked what Jenna Coleman's last episode was supposed to be.
Mm.
But you guys would be in much better shape if you had goldfish brain like I do, and you completely forgot that we knew those things until you saw the episode.
Clearly the problem is with us as the viewers, yes.
Yep.
That's what you get for having a memory.
Well, the tabloids have gotten so much from doing this nowadays, ever since the 50th, really, when they really learned that Doctor Who news was quite profitable and big. Mm-hmm. They've been rather relentless with the past of Capaldi's tenure, really, with the with news. I mean, remember when they announced that Davros was going to come back and it was going to tie into Genesis of the Daleks mm-hmm. for the Witches of Familiar? That was the Mirror. I mean, and that was like several weeks before the episode aired, which is a pretty big spoiler, to say the least.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is not everyone is spoiler averse. Some people want those spoilers, because if, you know, it really did make enough people angry that they would, you know, avoid those websites and publications to avoid the spoilers, then they would quit doing it. But that's obviously not the case.
People are genuinely interested in it, and that's why they know. That's why they do it as they do, because they know people will read it and we'll all talk about it, and we're talking about it now. So we're still giving them likes and hits and all that, really, in the long run, whatever news they have.
Well, there was actually, you talk about that some people are not as spoiler averse and things of that sort. I'm going to make sure that we include this in the notes when we publish this episode. But there was a study that the University of California at San Diego did back in 2011 about spoilers specifically, and to see whether or not it actually affected people's evaluation and enjoyment level of a story having been told some pivotal plot element prior to, and I think they did this with, I think they did this with reading specifically. So I don't know how well this may translate to cinematic or televised releases, but they were using things like Poirot books and things of that sort, that had things like ironic twists in them, or classics like John Updike and Chekhov and Agatha Christie novels and so forth. And they were sort of rating their reactions, whether they were spoiled or unspoiled, to what they considered their hedonistic enjoyment of the story. And it was actually relatively close, because I guess what they were explaining was that for the people that didn't know some of these critical elements of the story, they felt that for the people that rated it higher, having spoiled, they said they actually enjoyed, or it improved the nature of their enjoyment of the story, knowing the evocative elements of it, because they were anticipating, they wanted to know when was it going to happen. So it wasn't really so much the what as the when. It was like waiting for the shoe to drop. So it gave them an anticipatory enjoyment of it, to see, oh, I know something's coming, I know something's coming, and just waiting to see when it's going to occur.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's not the original intent of the work, per se, but it gives them a kind of a perverse thrill, because you kind of know as much as, if, in the case of Agatha Christie, Poirot, you know what he's knowing, or what the author knows. So yeah, I can understand that.
I guess I can understand it to a certain degree, because those are the people that... when you talk about things that have the omniscience within the character, you know, if we know more than our main characters, and we know that the villain is behind the door with a knife poised over his shoulder, and we're...
Makes you feel clever.
Exactly. So I can see that to a certain degree, but I mean, it's not going to map to things like, as they were joking about in the study here, you're not going to give people their birthday presents wrapped in cellophane. So you just know. I went through the effort of wrapping it, but I wanted you to know what it was as I walked up to you, kind of a thing. So,
but hey, you can pop the bubbles.
Hey. So I guess the other factor that I wanted to kind of put in here is, because we're talking about things like the press releases and such, that when we're dealing with... I want to keep this within Doctor Who, because we're talking about things like... All right, we started broaching this last week. The Bradley debacle.
Mm-hmm.
So this is
more likely by the minute.
Right. So, well, but here's the thing, though. And Ian, you may know about this, because I know you try to keep your finger to the pulse of these things as far as semantics. And I think a lot of this may have to do with semantics. There is a difference between companion and recurring character. And depending on your source... Or depending on whether you're getting it firsthand or third hand, or somebody who's referencing something that they read, that they were talking about something they read in the mirror, or what have you, that it starts, you know, you start wrapping layers of obscurity or obfuscation around it. And it could have begun as something like, you know, an unnamed source mentioned to us that there's a very good chance that Bradley's going to be a recurring character in the upcoming series. Recurring character? Recurring character? That must mean companion. And they're off to the races. So, mm-hmm. I mean, but even that discussion, to the point where now you're bringing rumors into the mix, but now you say, but they were right about the last couple of things. And now you're drifting into the spoiler seas using something that isn't even quantified yet. So is that double plus ungood?
You know, the Bradley thing is very tricky, because if he does turn out to be a companion, I don't necessarily think of it as much as a spoiler. I mean, you know someone new is going to be cast, and so we're gonna eventually get a casting announcement for us. But if he turns out to be, you know, some sort of pivotal character, like another Time Lord or a villain, yes, I would think he would be a bit of a spoiler in that regards to that. But as for a new companion, no. But, Rumors sell. I mean, look at the Chris Marshall thing. I mean, it's relentless. It was, as soon as it was revealed was not to be the Doctor, and it was hard to believe that people actually would think that he might be the companion. I mean, it was... I mean, a man should be calling his own agent to find out what he's been up to, or he's been offered. It just sells. We need these anticipation. It gets us talking about the show when it's not on. And we buy into it.
That is true. Well, that's actually a really good point. And we can kind of go around on this right now, is because this is one of the... Is this actually going to be technically the longest spell post-2005 between season proper episode and season proper episode, not counting our Christmas specials? Is this our longest stretch?
It's on par. I know we had the year between the return of Dr. Mysterio and Husband's Forever Song. We had nothing in that year, but I can't remember exactly where the series fell on either side.
Well, that was a whole year.
Pretty similar. Well, it's going to be a whole year for this one, too.
Plus.
Okay. Well, have they officially announced when it's supposed to come back?
No.
In the fall? Is it supposed to go back to the fall?
Yeah, the vague fall, which could be as early as August. You know, I mean, by the way that they've defined that season previously.
You know, at this point, I'm starting to get used to the hiatuses, to be honest.
True.
Well, so we're kind of talking about two different things at this point. So we're talking about spoilers, which are absolute fact of the show. But then we're talking about, I mean, basically casting rumors or
yeah.
Just rumors in general.
That was the reason why I wanted to kind of shoehorn it in there, because it gets to be something where during these long spells, we get so desperate to have something new to sort of latch on to. I think even those individuals who like to be averse to spoilers get a little antsy, and they're like, well, I wonder what the show's up to right now.
Right.
And I wonder what they're doing over there.
Where the problem comes from, though, is when these rumors turn out to have a basis of fact, and then in trying to find out more about the rumor, you end up uncovering spoilers. And that's where the danger is with the rumors. It's not, oh, well, you know, this you know, popular British icon has been seen in Cardiff palling around with whoever. And then you realize, oh, okay, well, they're probably going to be on the show, and let me see what I can find out. Oh, guess what? They're going to be the master. Those are where things get dangerous.
Right. That's why I love it when it becomes a really, really well-quantified rumor and it turns out to be wrong. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Because it just gets – got everybody all tuned in and got us all discussing all sorts of things, and it gets some great conversations going, and we get a lot of hypotheticals, which we all love hypotheticals. Mm-hmm. And then it all turns out to be complete smoke and mirrors, either intentionally or unintentionally. And then we sit back and go, huh, well, all right. But wouldn't it have been cool if, and then we're off on it again. And it gives us something.
What if?
Yeah, it gives us something to occupy that downtime, as long as it doesn't pay off. Because the moment it pays off, you sons of bitches, you spoiled it for me, you blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is because, how many times have we delved into the rumor mill and gone digging and enjoyed speculating about things, but the moment that it turns out, oh hey, guess what, that person is the human version of K-9 coming back, then we're all up in arms, and it's like, hey, why'd you ruin my show for me? That would have been a great reveal. And so it's a problem of knowing where to draw the line, how far you can allow yourself to get drawn in.
So again, I guess this might be a nice point to sort of button this, is we've been talking about ways that the nature of the individuals who want to share the information is evolving, in terms of their being either a little bit more savvy or a little bit more courteous, or at least a little bit more aware of the nature of the information that they're about to divulge. And then there's the onus that's put on the individual who wants to stick their fingers in their ears and la 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 for 72 hours plus. So I guess, would we consider it, are we tipping in one direction or the other right now? Did it used to be something where it was, you know, it's a free-for-all out there, it's the Wild West, so if you don't want to get caught in the crossfire, you better stay in the saloon and keep your head down over your drink? Or is it something where, you know what, there's some people that are going to safely get you out of the building, you know, if you need to make a run for it. I'm taking this analogy way too far, but I'm kind of enjoying it, because I'm waiting for somebody to break into a gunfighter's song here. Are we tipping more towards the asking the world at large to be a little more chill about it? Or is it a matter of, you know what, it's getting worse, it's getting furious, new sources are starting to actually get in on it, and now even publications are wanting to be part of the spoiling crowd more so than ever, and reputable news organizations are now starting to behave more like tabloids, so you better just, you know, put this cone of silence on.
I think it's gotten really bad, especially considering this past season with the amount of big things. I mean, like was you mentioned with Harold Saxon and the Cybermen and a lot of other plot points were just very blatantly revealed way earlier. And the upcoming Christmas special, we know more about that than we really should. Mm. I mean, set photos and the rumor months and months before he was even, I mean, pretty much whoever told the press knew as soon as Bradley was cast. Someone had leaked it to the press. That's how soon the turnaround was, from what I've heard from some people. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's just someone very deliberately trying to spoil it. And with Jodie Whittaker's casting, it's only going to get worse, because when that was revealed to the world, everybody, and I mean literally everybody, talked about it and wrote about it and blogged and twittered.
And the press attention for the upcoming series will be huge. So if you are a spoiler phobe, it's not going to get any better for you, I'm afraid. Mm.
I think the answer needs to be a balance of people need to understand that if you want to talk about things, then by all means, talk about it. Just find the proper place to do it. If I want to go and find the newest picture of my niece on Facebook, I shouldn't have to, you know, close my eyes and scroll through and just hope I randomly land on it and avoid everything else. There are places where you can discuss this kind of thing. There are plenty of avenues for you to get into those kind of things. Social media shouldn't be the place to do it. Or if you want to do it on social media, do it in a group set aside for that. You know, but at the same time, we have to understand that if we don't want to get spoilers, I mean, what this past Friday we had here in the States, we had Force Friday, the big Star Wars toy launch thing. And for me, I've reached a saturation point where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to know anything else about the new movie. I just want to wait and enjoy it when it comes out. And so I'm taking it upon myself to avoid any of the rumors or the pictures or anything like that. And I'm not going to be 100%. I know that. But I'm making the effort to avoid it as much as possible by avoiding the places that I know it's going to be.
Sure.
So that's where it needs to be is, one, if you do need to talk about it, find an appropriate place to do it. And two, if you want to avoid the spoilers, you really have to take it on yourself to try and make that known to the people that are on your social media or things like that. But, you know, make sure you avoid the places that you could encounter them.
I think you nailed it on the head. There's definitely a balance. You have to be courteous yourself, but you also, if you're really that sensitive and don't want them, you have to take the initiative to avoid them. And I think if you're on social media, you know, you should know at this point, you know, where the traps might be for such things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Here be monsters.
If you don't want spoilers, don't go to the Doctor Who group, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, you can only see so many Walking Dead or Game of Thrones memes before you say, you know what, I'm just going to unfollow this person because I don't even watch the shows, but I can tell you exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was me. That's me for Game of Thrones. Yes. Hodor, I know what that's about, and I've never seen it.
Yep. And Haley, closing thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I've got an anecdote that I should share, I think, if we're talking spoilers.
Yeah.
This was back when the Jericho comics came out, and I had read, you know, it was like 3 or 4 in, and I had read the latest one, and I was talking to someone who hadn't read the last one. They kept asking me questions. Oh, does this happen? Does this happen? Does this happen? And, you know, I was like, oh, no, that doesn't. Oh, yeah, that does. Does this happen? No, that doesn't happen, but this does. And when I offered information that she hadn't specifically asked for, she was like, dude, spoilers. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's everyone's definition is going to be slightly different, and everyone's level of curiosity is going to be slightly different. With the knowledge of the fact that if you dig deep enough, someone's gonna tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's unfair to go into something like a Doctor Who group or, you know, a Marvel group or whatever, and then expect everyone there to avoid spoiling you when you went into a forum that is designed to spoil.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Well, given the discussion of spoilers, do we figure at this point we might as well discuss news of things that that have actually been officially sanctioned?
Dig up under this rock, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So who is Chris Marshall this week?
He's actually Jesus.
The Valiard?
He's playing Susan.
Susan with a neck beard. Oh, my God.
And they thought the Jodie Whittaker casting was controversial. Wait a minute.
All right.
Grandfather!
A Boy Called Sue.
Well, right. I wanted to make sure that we gave some big shouts to this because Forbidden Planet was sharing so much great information about it over the course of this past weekend. And that has to do with the very timely release of a Four Doctor crossover comic series that the fantastic Rachel Stott, George Mann, and Kevin Scott have been working on. that is now there for you to grab your first of eight issues that you can get a hold of. I love everything about this for a myriad of reasons. It is chock-a-block full of little references to each of the Doctor's personas that I think Mann and Scott have captured perfectly. Rachel has a field day with a lot of the artwork in this, and even down to little references. We'll share this particular link that you can that you get some excerpts from it. And it's Bill Potts looking at this detritus as the Doctor is tearing apart a series of reference books in the Terrence Dix library.
You beat me to it, because I perused through it, and that was the first thing I saw, and I thought, oh, isn't that glorious?
it's going to be absolutely delightful. So please make sure that you're giving them all your monies on this one, for absolute sure.
Yes, they're doing wonderful work.
Yep. Now the next piece, which also has to do with things we've been anxiously awaiting, and now we've got a next installment of it. Jay, have you gotten a chance to listen to this yet?
Oh God, yes.
Okay,
at least five or six times in the last like 20 minutes.
All right.
So I mean, if you know anything about this show, you understand that Kier and I are big fans of Big Finish. And one of the hottest titles that we've been waiting for is the Eighth Doctor's The Time War series. And this this takes place clearly before the events of Night of the Doctor, but as things are happening, this just seems like it's going to be so much fun. I mean, Paul McGann is in his element, and Big Finish understands what it is that the listeners really want from this story. Mm-hmm. So it just... everything about it sounds fantastic, and I've already sent them more than my fair share of money.
Right. But not to mention the fact, I mean, and from the writing side of it, you've got Matt Fitton and John Dorney, who we've enjoyed their story work on multiple formats for quite some time. I mean, Matt's, you know, his involvement with Big Finish has given us some of the best stories I personally have enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And when you read through the synopsis of the four installments that you're getting from this, you can tell that you are right at that tipping point prior to Night of the Doctor, you know, and mm-hmm. you're wondering exactly how far, because they've made it very clear of saying that this is only the first series. So
yes,
they're going to work with this. I don't know whether the Bliss companion that they're introducing to this with Raki Takrar is actually going to carry through. Be interesting, you know, obviously to find out what her fate is in all this. But I want to know, how quickly are they going to, you know, to dance us up to that moment? You know, how many atrocities does he have to either be involved with or be at the hand of before he makes the decision? You know, where he's gotten himself this horrible reputation that we see in Night of the Doctor. You know,
yeah.
Much to play with.
They could eke it out for a couple of audio seasons. You know, he's been on a very slow path for the Time War for quite a while, really, in mm-hmm. the audios.
Yeah,
even before they had the rights. An interesting tie-in here is, you know, Raki Sarkar was one of the big people rumored to be the new companion before Chromaki was cast.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a nice irony that she now is a companion for the Doctor.
It's a very incestuous group. Everybody's... well, we all know Britain only has 15 actors, so they're all...
And Big Finish is calling Chris Marshall right now.
15 actors and three of them are Chris Marshall.
Yes.
But speaking of Jodie and all of the casting kerfuffle, there was the mention in her Rolling Stone interview a few days prior that while she didn't know exactly who, she was up against a number of women actors for the role, a number of them. So quantify it, I don't know. Identify who they are, maybe that'll emerge in time. We're still finding out to this day who had been considered for 11th and 12th Doctors along the way. It seems like every couple of months someone says, oh yeah, I read for that. But now it's clear that I think to a certain degree, Chris Chibnall has a direction he wanted the story to go. There's a story he wants to tell, and to a certain degree, I believe, just as Moffat had said at certain times, you know, I cast individuals based on their ability to carry forward a story that I very explicitly want to be told. So if this is where Chris wants to take the story, and he says, I need her, whoever she is, to convey this tale that I want to tell, then there you go.
Right. Well, it seems to fit up. Remember him talking about his plans and that he didn't think the BBC were going to go along with it, and how he said that he always wanted a female actress, well, of course a female actress, for the role. Mm-hmm. So it seems like he definitely had this plan in mind.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of find it interesting because he did mention at one point that he had hoped that Capaldi had stayed on. So I'm very curious whether if he would have done one season with Capaldi and then Capaldi would have left and then he would have gone on to do, you know, something like Jodie Whittaker for the next. A very interesting what if of what would have happened with that if Capaldi had stayed on for one more season.
Knowing the nature of the way he's done his work in the past, I wouldn't be surprised if he would have done it as a mid-season banger, you know, and just really...
Oh, that would have been really, you know, exciting and new and different. Would have caught us off guard, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because it wouldn't be one of those things where they're saying, okay, they're handing over the keys to this crew, and now they're changing all the locks on the TARDIS, and this, then the other thing, yeah. And, you know, and all of a sudden it's just... Whether they, it'd be similarly the way that we were anticipating Jenna Coleman's exit. We didn't know it's going to happen sometime in this back half of the season, but when, sort of thing. And obviously your viewership spikes for that. But yeah, as far as if speaking about changing a crew, this is our last little item to include here. If you still have any dreams or aspirations to be involved in any way. In Doctor Who as a craft, your door is officially open, because apparently if you go over to the BBC's job opportunities site right now, there is a script editor position open.
Right.
If you have, quote, previous experience of script editing in a large-scale dramatic series. So, I mean, Haley's ready.
I'm firing up Microsoft Word as we speak.
And you're already out of the running.
Oh, I'm still using Corel Word Perfect.
Can you see Clippy? I see you're trying to apply for a job for Doctor Who. You want some help with that?
Yes.
Thank you, Clippy.
For anyone that has ever complained about a script or, you know, said that you can do it better, now's your chance to send in your resume and stop complaining. Because there's no reason for anyone to complain about it if you're not willing to send in your CV.
Very true. Well, by the time this drops, though, because this is, as we're recording, the open job rec is closing today.
Okay.
So for all you time travelers, just skip back about 48 hours, get yourself in there.
There you go.
We'll congratulate you
later.
Can
you imagine all the angry emails we'll be inundated with?
Well, they did say they wanted somebody with experience in running a large-scale drama series. So... Yeah.
Hey, I can lie on my resume just like anybody else.
Well, yeah.
Damn
yeah.
Straight.
Raising three boys, Jay, is a large-scale dramatic series. So,
well,
yes,
you've
had
know.
Extensive experience.
The 15 entire, years of it so far.
This is the story arc that wraps three episodes. Where the hell is my other sock? Who packed this in my lunchbox, you jerks?
Your shoe was on your foot the whole time.
Again?
All right. Well, when we converge for next week's conversation, we'll obviously be returning to our on-again, off-again classic rewatch. We will have our friend Charles Martin of the Happiness Patrol, who will be joining us for The Curse of Peladon.
Yay.
Yeah, it also will be marking our 250th episode, which is kind of a cool little milestone. So maybe we'll have to do something fun for that regard as well.
Ooh, congratulations.
Yeah, I don't know what that means as far as quintan, septennial, something. Make up some word. But
it's all relative when you're time travelers anyway, so we try not to make a big deal.
Yeah, we actually did the 250th episode in our timeline like 3 weeks ago, so... Yeah. But yes, Ian, let us know, what are the myriad of ways that we could hear or read from what spills out of your brain with regards to Doctor Who and other topics?
Well, you can always reach me on Twitter that I never use at the real McCann, R-E-E-L McCann, M-C-C-A-N-N. There's also my blog. His name is The Casual Nexus.
Wait, is that causal? It's also, no, it's not causal. No, it's no, casual.
No, casual. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Have you been reading it wrong all this time?
No, my brain just wants to correct it into something more sci-fi
yes,
oriented.
Yes. So does Google and spell check and everyone else. Yeah. No, I like little puns. That's how I'm all my naming. But no, the Casual Nexus. And I have a feature I've been doing called Chronological Hysteresis, taken from Meglos. A little pun on that one as well.
Okay.
I've been semi-reviewing, trying to look at Doctor Who from its beginnings and looking at the narrative changes and all that. And I've just started this week on the Target novelizations. I've just started the first one, so that's interesting for me, since I've never actually really read many of them. I know. Okay. Don't throw a stone. And I also have a little feature called Pull to Open, where I have some guest authors come in and take a look at the different characters in the, quote brackets, universe.
Yes. Excellent. Okay, and then obviously there's also, you've been involved outside of the Doctor Who scope. You've just been most recently involved in a publication for some other science fiction franchises, correct?
Oh, yes, Star Trek The Next Generation, of all things. It's got an anniversary coming up. ATB Publishing has Outside In Makes It So. 44 essays on all the episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I am Data's Day in season 4 of all things. So it's nice. It's a short but sweet, interesting one.
Cool.
But yes, it comes out September 28th of this year, which it's the 30th anniversary. Oh, God, it makes me feel old.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, we've loved everything that ATB gets our hands on. They've given us such, especially this side of the pond has been something that's been a great resource for fans of multiple franchises. So we'll look forward to that one as well. So yeah, Jay, close us out, sir.
This has been episode 249 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, there's a possibility that I might come back next week to talk about a show from a place. Is that safe to say? Are we good?
Ooh, I don't know. Are you placing it? Are you making assumptions about the location? I don't know. If it's taking place in a place, I'm not sure I'm going to tune in for that one. I might be off next week.
Do a rain check.
Yeah. And this is Kira saying, you're not going to believe what I'm going to be wearing for Labor Day tomorrow. So you're going to have to stay on those social media networks and just wait for the stream. It's going to be shocking.
Is it white?
Six things Kira's going to wear tomorrow.
Post Labor Day.
I don't want spoilers. Don't spoil me.
I'm going to be an adipose. All white after Labor Day. 6'4" adipose. There you go.
Oh, God.
And this is Haley saying, spoilers.
Wow. You think she said that a few times?
We'll see you guys next week.
Allons-y.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
All right, let's get cracking. Welcome to episode 2. What the hell was that?
I was hitting record.
At least she caught it now.
You had literally one job.
And I did it before I said anything, so...
I'm salaried. I can clock in late, and it doesn't really affect me.